We're holding on for days. I'm with Aleph, the twelfth line. We learned in the Mishnah yesterday that there can be a case where a person plows and he's hired for 8 different malchus, because we said, the Mishnah had said that he's plowing with an ox and a donkey, and we discussed in some detail what exactly is the scenario and the possibility that, what exactly is the story with this ox, what exactly is the story with this donkey, and the possibility that maybe even the Mishnah hadn't meant davka, an ox and a donkey, but just 2 different species. They're mukdoshin, they're hektish. The Gemara is going to explain that the ox over here is a bechor, and the donkey that Rivan had explained is also a petah chamer, but then wondered, is it in fact true a person is chayav malchus for working with it? And again, we talked about that whole point. It's kilayim, there's kilayim v'kerem over here, and we talked about the point that he's covering them with dirt as he's going, and therefore promoting their growth. It's shmitah, it's yomtev, he's a koyin, and he's a nazir, and it's all in a basic kvaris. And then we also had that Rav Hanani ben Chachinai had said that you can also have that he's wearing kilayim, he's wearing shatnez at this time, and the Chum told him that has nothing to do. That has nothing to do with the plowing process. In any case, so then that led us into a discussion about the Malachas on Yom Tov and about the different other cases where a person might be chayav multiple malchus for one action. So now the Gemara says Simen Shanbai Shanaz. This is a simen where you have one of a letter representing each of the following chachamim. Seven different chachamim are going to ask about things that could have been included as well in the Mishnah's listing. So the shin for Hoshaya, the shin for Rav Hoshaya, the nun for the nun for Rav Hananya, the beis for Rav Abahu, and so forth. Often in these simonim, it doesn't use the first letter because it uses like instead the first letter that really is very clearly sounded out when you're mentioning the names. Like in Hoshaya, the shin is the first really noticeable letter. Anyway, Maskus for Rabbi Hoshaya. So Rabbi Hoshaya says, why is the Mishnah missing out one? The Lachshav Nami has a Reya Benachal Eisan. Why did the Mishnah also mention where he's plowing and plant, where he's plowing and then promoting the growth of plants in a Nachal Eson, which is the valley where the valley where an Eglah Rufa was killed. So you have in the Sechta Sota, it'll be in a few weeks in Dafa Yomi of Sphira, that you have the whole story of the Eglah Rufa. The Pasuk says that it's brought to a Nachal Eson, you know, Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, what Nachal Eson means, whether it means hard ground or whether it means according to Rashi or fast-flowing stream, according to the Rambam. Anyway, you kill the Eglah Rufa over there, and then afterwards, the Pasuk says, you're never allowed to plant, or you're never allowed to plow or plant in that land again. So now, suppose that he's doing his plowing in that land that was previously used for an Eglah Rufa, then that's another Malchus. Why isn't the Mishnah listing that? And the warning not to do it would be because the pasuk says that it will not be planted, that it will not be cultivated or planted. The Gemara explains there, it does mean it has to be land that previously was not cultivated, but also since it says in the future tense ye ovid and yizareya, then we learn from that that you're not allowed to do that in the future as well. So that's the first one. When the Mishnah is saying that he can be chayav 8 malchus, the Mishnah could have listed that as well, and it would have been another one as well. This and all the other ones that the Gemara is going to ask, all those 7 different amidoyim, we actually have one of them. There's 8 questions, but Abaya asks 2 of them. In fact, that 2 of the letters in the simon belong to his name. Anyway, and then the Gemara is not going to end up answering any of them. So Tosfos explains that actually we still could say ton of a shire. When the Gemara, we learned yesterday, the Gemara had asked, what about another Easter of Yom Tov on the face of it? If we're talking about that he's plowing and he's covering seeds over there and promoting their growth, then he should be chayav for 2 malachas on Yom Tov. And we brought the point that there's ein chiluk malachas for Yom Tov, that when it comes to Yom Tov, there's no separate malachas and a person just getting malchus in general for violating Yom Tov and not a separate malchus for each malacha. And the Gemara had said, so at first the Gemara had said, okay, Tana B'Shire, maybe it left out other ones, and the Gemara had said, no, you can't do that, because the Mishnah had said specifically 8. However, Tosfos says that was, in other words, when you're talking within a particular area of Isser that the Tana is mentioning, such as Yom Tov, if in fact there are multiple Malkus, then the Tana should be mentioning it and not leaving it out. But it doesn't mean that there can't be many other things in other areas of Halacha that the Tana could have mentioned and he just didn't bother to. So therefore, so the answer would be to this and to all the other ones, yes, the Tana could have mentioned that he does it in a Nachal Eisan and it would have been another Malkus, but the Tana is not really out to do that. The Tana is just mention the eight that he mentioned, and there's a chiddush in each one of them, and it's true that there could conceivably be other ones. Okay. Next, Maskef for Rav Hananya. Rav Hananya similarly asks, V'lech Shvinami, Hamoichek as Hashem Bahali Chosei. You could have where while he's plowing, he erases the name of Hashem. Let's say you have a piece of paper with Hashem's name written on it on the ground, and he goes and then and brings the plow over it, and therefore destroys that written name. V'azharosam, and there would be Chayev Malkus for that, because V'azharosam Ehocha, the warning for that is, because the Pasuk says about Avadazara, V'badjem es Shemam V'gami, you should destroy their names, and then it continues. Don't do that to Hashem, which is where we learn the whole concept that you're not allowed to erase Hashem's name or destroy anything of Hektish, etc. So that would be another Malkus. Maskefor Rav Abahu similarly asked, V'lashav nami akotzet es bahautoi. Here's another one you could say, well, while he's plowing, he also cuts off a beheres, cuts off a spot of tzaras or the simonim that make a definitive tzaras. And the warning in the Torah not to do that is because the Pasuk says, Yishomer b'negat tzaras. Be careful with the negat tzaras, and whenever it says Yishomer, it means Aloiseseh, so here it means Aloiseseh to not cut off the tzaras, for a person to not cut off the tzaras, or the simonim of it, from his skin. The Aruch HaNer, by the way, makes a point. In the Mishnah, we're talking about where he's a Nazir and is getting Malkus for going into a Beis HaKvaris and becoming Tomei. Now, when a Nazir becomes a Mitzvah, then his Nazirus is suspended. So that being the case, then what is Rav Hananya asking? That it should have mentioned that when he's a Mitzvah, then he's not going to be a Nazir. So, Now the Rambam holds that actually it is true that his Nazirus is suspended, meaning the days don't count, but nevertheless he still would be Chayiv Malkus during the time that he's a Mitzvah. If he does any of the Yisurim or a Nazir, well then in that case, the answer is very neat. So in that case, yes, he's a Nazir. He became a Mitzvah. Temporarily, his count of Nazirus is suspended. He's going to have to finish his 30 days later on, but nevertheless, he's still Chayiv Malkus for going into a Beis HaKvaris during that time. And the Aruch HaNer goes on to say, even if not, then listen, you could say it wasn't he cut off his own tzaras, but rather somebody else's. Okay. Maskefla Abaya. Then Abaya says, here's another one that we can ask. That was Rav Abahu asking that one, rather, whatever. Here's another one the Mishnah could have listed, where while he's plowing, he's detaching the choshen from the ephod, the hameser bade oren, or where he's removing the poles of the oren while he's pushing them out of their place while he's plowing. And the warnings not to do those things are in the case of the badim is v'lo yosru that the badim are never allowed to be removed from the oren, and as far as the choshen that the choshen should never be moved from the ephod. So you could conceivably have then that he's while he's plowing, he's doing one of those things. The Aruch HaNer also points out, and there's a lot of discussion about if Abaya anyway is going to mention Yisurim involving the Big Kahuna, then there's another one that you're not allowed to tear the Big Kahuna. So why doesn't he mention that? And there's quite a bit of discussion about that. It may be actually that, at least according to the Rambam, there's actually no specific Isur to tear the Big Kahuna, but rather that when the Pasuk says Lo Yikareya, it says by the Me'il, it should not be torn, would mean that you have to make it in a way that it doesn't get torn in the first place. But the fact is that Amram does bring the halacha that there is such an Isser, and And then one point is, in all the discussion about it, that there may be, there's a specific issur on tearing the me'il, which is where the pasuk mentions it, but in addition, you're also not allowed to tear any of the big kahuna, not so much because the pasuk says lo yikorea, but because you're not allowed to destroy anything that has Hashem's name associated with it. Well, the Reb Chanina already mentioned that in connection with erasing Hashem's name. Okay. In any case, the point is that here you can have where he did one of those things while he was plowing, as he caused that. Actually, the Ritvah explains as far as the badim, what we mean is, let's say he took the badim out of the oren, used them to make his plow, and every moment that they're off the oren, then he's over on this iser of lo yasuru mimenu. Although the Aruch HaNer says, wait a minute, where we ever find that there's such an iser that he would be over on every moment? So no, what he means, in other words, the choshen or the oren are found nearby, and then, as he's plowing, he bangs into the choshen and ephod and causes them to get detached or removes the bottom of the oren. Seems odd, by the way, this idea that you would have those kalim found dafta next to the place that he plows, but still, it is possible. In addition, also, there's an interesting story. There's the famous book that came out 40 years ago or so called All for the Boss. Stories about a year of Yaakov Yosef Herman, one of the early from activists in America in the 1920s and 30s. His daughter wrote the book. Anyway, she mentions at one point that there was a year a farmer in Eretz Yisrael was plowing in his field and falls into a hole and finds the Kalim of the Bais HaMikdash over there, and a whole story involving they go to consult with the Chofetz Chaim about what to do, etc. So I suppose nowadays, at least, it could have, after the Herman, it could happen then that those things are actually found in a field and buried underground, waiting for Mashiach to come and take him out, and therefore now he might be banging into them and causing them to get detached. Okay. Next, Maskiflo Rav Ashi. Here Rav Ashi has another question. Here the Mishnah could also be talking about where he's plowing using wood from an Asherah. So he takes wood from an Asherah tree and makes his plow out of that. And the warning not to do that is from the pasuk v'le'yidbak b'yad chamoma. None of the banned things should remain in your hand. Yesterday we mentioned that in connection with the case where a person is cooking gidanosha in milk on yomtiv, where the Gemara had said that yes, one of the things could in fact be that he's using atzei asherah. So here in a similar vein, he could be using atzei asherah for his plow. Maske for Ravina. Then Ravina says, here's another one. The lech of Nami hakotzitz ilonis tovis. Here's another one. While he's plowing, he chops down or knocks down good fruit trees. And in that case, the warning not to do that is because the pasuk says you're not allowed to destroy fruit trees during a siege. Kimi menu soichol, you're allowed to eat, you can eat from them, but because you can eat from them, but oisele sichlos, therefore you shouldn't chop them down. So it would be a loisa said not to, chop down fruit bearing trees. So again, the Gemara has not answered any of these, and as Tosfos says, that's fine. We could say, in the end, Tana B'Shire, these are things in other areas of Halacha, outside of the eight that the Mishnah mentioned, and therefore didn't bother mentioning them. But okay. So now another one. Omer Reb Ze'era L'Rabmani. Reb Ze'era asks another one. That's the Zion of the Simon before Shanbai Shanaz. So Reb Ze'era says, here's another one, which this one the Gemara is going to answer. The Lech of Nami could go into Omer Shavuah Shala Echrish B'Yomtiv. Suppose the person to begin with said, a Shavuah that I'm not going to, that I'm not going to plow on Yomtiv. Well, then now he's over on his Shavuah. So Ramani answers him, Hosam, like a Chol HaShavuah. No, because in that case, the Shavuah is not going to be Chal on him in the first place. Mushva v'omid mehar Sinai, who, because to begin with, he's be sworn from Har Sinai not to do such a thing. We're going to learn the next Masechta here after Makkos. The next Masechta is Shavuos, and in the middle of that Masechta, we're going to be talking about these dinim of Shavuos Bitri, what kind of Shavuos are Chal and what are not Chal, and one of them is, you have exactly that, when a person is already besworn from Har Sinai to do or not to do something, then a Shavuos to do that doesn't have any effect. Okay. Amalei, so Reb Ze'era says, fine, you could still have to go into Amash Shavuah Shal Echrish Bein B'chol Bein Miyamdiv. Fine, you could say, though, that he says a Shavuah that I won't plow on weekdays or on Yomtiv. So when he swears just not to do it on Yom Tov, then fine, it can't be effective again, because he would be sworn not to do that on Yom Tov. The Rivan points out that when in Masechta Shavuos, we're going to learn, since the pasuk says about a Shavua, lahora oy lahetiv, that a person could be swearing to do bad or to do good, meaning, for example, a person could swear, I will eat or I won't eat, or whatever, so Shavua has to be something where you could swear either way. Here, a person can't swear that I will plow on Yom Tov, because that's ineffective. He already has a shvur, he's already mushva from Har Sinai not to plow on Yom Tov. So by the same token, a shvur to not plow is also not going to be effective. But the fact is, you could also have, on the other hand, you have what's called isu koilo, that he swears to not ever plow on weekdays or on Yom Tov, and therefore, so that would be effective, because now it includes, it's called Kolol Dvarim Amutarim in Dvarim HaAsurim, he's including together things that are also together with things that are mutter, and such a shavua could be chal. Tosfos actually says, still though, the fact is, that how is it possible to swear that he will plow, whether on weekdays or on Yom Tov? Again, it has to be lahorai lahetiv, as we're going to learn in the next Masechta, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, so he says that, you know what, you could have, for example, the dirt over here, we could be talking about as loose dirt, where at least on a daraisa level, we wouldn't be chayav for plowing in it. So that would be the scenario. So you could have where he swears not to plow at all on weekdays or on Yom Tov, and there is the possibility of him actually being able to swear, hypothetically, he could have sworn that he will plow on Yom Tov in soft dirt like that, in loose dirt like that, where there's no isser min haTorah, and therefore the shavua not to plow is able to be chal. The Maharam teaches out. We don't mean that over here, we don't mean that in this particular case, where he's plowing, the dirt is loose, because then the Mishnah had said he's chayav for plowing on Yom Tov, and here we're talking about that not. It means, in other words, that hypothetically he could swear, I will never plow in any kind of dirt on weekdays or on Yom Tov, and such a shvor is chal, and the reason it's chal is because there is the possibility of swearing the other way around, that I will plow in some kind of dirt on Yom Tov, namely in loose dirt, and therefore you have the lahorai lahetiv criteria. Anyway, so that's the question. Then in that case, why didn't the Mishnah mention that you could have a shavua involved over here? The Rivan, by the way, digresses over here to explain the matter of Isur Moisif and Isur Koilo. Here we're talking about if he swears not to plow on weekdays or on Yom Tov, it's called an Isur Koilo. It means that he's including something which otherwise would have been mutter, to plow on weekdays together with something which anyway is already osur, namely plowing on Yom Tov. And then he goes on to explain the concept of Isur Moisif, which is where you're adding within the Isser itself, you're adding a new dimension of Isser. So he gives an example. Let's say you have a woman who's married, and then she becomes his mother-in-law, and then he marries her daughter, and she becomes his mother-in-law. So then there's an Isser Moisif involved, because before she was also to him as an Eishes Ish, and now as his mother-in-law, she's further also to him. And in fact, the Misser would be upgraded, as we learned at Sanhedrin. He'd go from Chenek to Skila, and he goes on to discuss that point in some detail about Isser Moisif and Isser Kolo. The reason why he's doing that over here is because in a few lines, the Mishnah is going to mention the concept of Isur Kolo. The Gemara is going to talk about the concept of Isur Kolo, so it's a good place to discuss this point. So back to the question, back to the Gemara then. By the way, Akiva Eger and Gilyon Ashas references over here something from the Noda Behorda that explains, that discusses further about that, about this whole definition of Isur Moisif and Isur Kolo. One thing is that the you can look at it from the perspective of the man versus of the woman. Here you have the case that we're talking about over here is that the she's already also to him as an Eishes Ish, and now in addition she becomes also to him as his mother-in-law, but on the other hand, the Rivan is actually looking at it from the perspective of the woman, that she was also to him, but let's say, for example, that you could have the other way around, she was also to him before, let's say he married her daughter, and now she's remarrying, now she becomes also to other men as well, so therefore, so you have, So the Noda Bihuda says that actually, if you look in the Rivan, you would have to say at the end that it says over here that L'chai Voshtayim, the Noda Bihuda says it should be L'chai Voshtayim, that she would be Chayiv to Malkus. And then there's a lot of further discussion about that, about the exact parameters of Issur Kodal and Issur Mosif. Famously, by the way, you have the famous story of Rabbi Avner, the story of the Ramban's Talmud, who shmadzich and became a high-ranking minister in the government, and then he summons the Ramban on Yom Kippur and starts, and then goes and kills an animal and roasts it and eats it in front of the Ramban. The whole story with Amarti Afehem, part of the, one part of the story is that the guy asks Avner the Ramban in a chutz particular way, so how many Yisurim have I been over on? And the Ramban says four, and he says no, five, and the argument was basically about the parameters of Issur Kodal and Issur Mosif. The story is that the Ramban gave him a sharp look, and he stopped arguing, because to that extent, at least, he had a still residual derech eretz for the Ramban, and then he asked the Ramban about the psukim of Havazinu, and the Ramban tells him, Amarti Afehem, and Avner does shuva on the whole story. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So again, the question is, what happened, why are we not listing this shuvah? So the Gemara says, that at least we have an answer to. You could say the Mishnah is not listing things where you could take away the Isser by going and being Matur Neder. Shavuot is like a Neder in that regard. You can be Matur it. So therefore, so the Mishnah doesn't want to bother mentioning such a thing, because sure, he would be Chayiv Malkus if he's Oiran as Shavuot. But he could instead be Matur Neder, and therefore, and therefore the Mishnah doesn't list it. So the Gemara says, Veloy. So you're telling me not? What about Hekdesh? We said about Hekdesh. We said in the Mishnah that you can have the ox and maybe the donkey belong to Hekdesh. And Hekdesh you are able to be Matur Neder on. The answer is B'Bechor. We're talking about where the ox is a Bechor and it has an intrinsic Kedusha and there's no Hataras Adarim for it. All right, the Gemara says, Vahare Nozir. What about where he's a Nozir and he could be Matur Neder on his Nazirus? And the answer is the Nozir Shimshin. We're talking about where he's a Nozir Shimshin. A Nozir Shimshin, the Gemara tells us, in the Masechta Nozir, a person is not able to be Matur Neder. The Rivan here explains that the actual original Nazirus Shimshin was imposed on Shimshin by a Malach, and therefore there's no Hataras Nedarim on it. That's according to the Rivan, that's Davka, because in that particular case, where he was besworn to it by a Malach, that said, the Rambam says more generally, La Halacha, that if a person, even in later times, says, I'm going to be a Nozir Shimshin, then he has the special dinim of a Nozir Shimshin, and as part of that, then he can't be Matur Neder. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, Nozer Shimshin by Tamui L'Mesim, who is a Nozer Shimshin also to become Tamui L'Mes? The Gemara establishes there in Masechta Nozer that a Nozer Shimshin is actually able to become Tamui L'Mes. Shimshin himself killed Plishtim throughout his career, fighting against them, and the Gemara explains, Halacha L'Mosh Misina, that a Nozer Shimshin is a special type of Nozer who's able to become Tamui L'Mes. Well, in our Mishnah, then why are we giving him Malkus for going into a Beis HaKvaros and plowing over there? Fine. The Gemara answer is you're right. You can't say that we're talking about a special Nozer Shimshin. Ella, rather, we have to answer Hai Tana Isu Kolo Lesle, the Tana of our Mishnah, does not hold of the concept of Isu Kolo, so according to him, we couldn't say that if he makes a Shavuah not to plow on weekdays or on Yom Tov, that such a Shavuah would be able to be Chal, because and include something which would otherwise mutter, plowing on weekdays, together with something which is also plowing on Yom Tov, the Tana does not hold of that concept, therefore he couldn't have mentioned the case of a Shavuah, because then there's such a Shavuah, according to him, has no effect, and therefore he left it out, and therefore we don't have to say that everything in our Mishnah is Davka, something that can be that it's not possible to be Matur Neder. So we could say, in other words, that yes, the ox of a heel could be any kind of, the ox of a heel could be any kind of hektish, not necessarily bechor. The nozir could be a regular type of nozir, and you could be Matur Neder. Fine, the Mishnah is, in fact, in the end, listing things that you could be Matur Neder. We don't care about that. A number of the Mefarshim explain, actually, that all these questions, all these seven or eight questions, all were basically on our Mishnah. Why did our Mishnah not list more things than the eight? there are actually explanations. There are actually explanations. The question is, more generally, the whole Perek, we've been listing a couple of dozen things that a person is Chayav Malkus on, so why didn't the Mishnah mention any of those? So in that case, the answer would basically be, listen, the Mishnah doesn't have to list everything. Next. The Gemara says, Omer of Hoshia, now here we talked about in the Mishnah, where he's plowing with an ox and a donkey together, and he's chayav for kilai behema, for having two different types of animals plow together. So in that connection, Omer of Hoshia, Hamabia Shur Psula Mekdoshin, if a person were to take an ox of Psula Mekdoshin, an animal that was supposed to be used as a korban, and then became posel, such as with a mum, where even after that, you have certain isurim, you have certain restrictions on what you can do with that animal, one of them being that you can't work with it. So now, if a person were to go and breed it with another animal, loikas shnayim, then he would get double malchus, even one because of kilayim, as the Gemara is going to explain. The animal itself is considered intrinsically kilayim, and number two, because he's using an animal of kodshim. So what is that? So Amar Rav Yitzchak, and why is that? We'll see in a second. Amar Rav Yitzchak, similarly, Hamanig B'Sherb Sulam Mekdoshim, similarly, if a person hitches up this animal to a wagon or something, and then causes the animal to pull the wagon, loike, then he would get Malkus, because then he's getting Malkus, for using kilayim to pull a wagon. Try to guf echad hu, because after all, it's one guf. The animal is only one animal. V'asori akoshev, k'shnei gufim, but the pasuk counts it as though it was two. Meaning, in other words, the Rivan says, it's in a way it's chulin, but in a way it's also kodshin. It's chulin in the sense that you don't have to sheft it in the Beis HaMikdash. You sheft it wherever you want, and you can eat it wherever you want. As the Pasuk says, you can eat it anywhere, katsviv v'cha'ayil. On the other hand, you still have restrictions. You can't shear it, you can't work with it. So it's considered, in effect, two animals in one. And Ivan goes and brings from the relevant Sifri on the pasuk over there that explains that the pesukim are talking about over there about psula mekdoshin and saying tizbach ve'ochalta. You can shecht it and eat it, but tizbach implies you can only shecht it. You can't shear it, and ve'ochalta, you can eat it, meaning you can't work it, and bosu, you can only eat the meat, but not the milk of it. So all of that is talking about psula mekdoshin. So now he can't breed it with another animal, even of the same type, because then it would be considered kilayim. And in addition, he's doing work with it. And the same thing with manig, even if he does it all by itself, or with another ox, then still, it's two animals in one, and therefore he's chayav malchus from it. Although the Rivan says it seems a dvar tema, it seems a strange thing to say, that it should be considered kilayim with one another, just because it has two statuses within it. Is that reason enough to make it kilayim? So the Rivan leaves the question open. Tosfos says that actually the reason is, Tosfos says, Rabbi Natan gave an explanation, which Tosfos says, kimin choymer, it's a very beautiful explanation, that because the Pasuk mentions in connection with Psula Mekdoshin, katsvi v'cha'ayel, it's like a deer and like a gazelle, so therefore we learn from that it's considered like two different species, a deer and a gazelle in one, and therefore there can be kilayim in it. Tosfos also says, actually, that's why the Gemara is bringing this point in over here, is because we mentioned in the Mishnah where he's plowing using an ox of kodshim, and he's chayav for kilayim because he's doing it together with a donkey. So the Gemara is pointing out that Rav Hoshea and Rav Yitzchak are pointing out, you should know that it's possible for him to be chayav kilayim even without there being another animal in the mix, just because the psula mekdoshin itself is considered two animals in one. Tosfos also points out, by the way, only if the ox is pulling something, a wagon, or carrying something, or whatever. Otherwise, just telling the animal to move and whatever would not be osir. In fact, Tosfos says it has to be that way, otherwise how could you get an ox of psula mekdoshin from point A to point B? So it's only if you have it carry a burden for you. Okay. Now that we've gone through, since the beginning of the Perek, and talking about the various isurim for which a person is chayav malchus, so in the Mishnayos so far, we had a bunch of them, and then in the Gemara, we had a bunch more. Now let's start talking about the actual procedure of malchus. So the Mishnah says, Kama Malkinoi, so how many Malkus do they give the person? Arboim Choser Achas, 40 minus 1, 39. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Mispar, the Pasuk says that they should give him Malkus in a number, Arboim and 40. So we darshan, the Mispar, Arboim, we darshan that it means the count that is going to lead to 40. In other words, therefore 39. So he does the 39th one, after which, after you would count 39, then the next number, you would say is 40, as the Gemara is going to, so that means Minyan Shu Samach L'Arboim means a number that's right before 40, not 40 itself. Because the Pasuk says, the Kedeva Shah said, Bimisper, Rashi on the Pasuk points out, if it said Bamisper in the number, then it would mean the number that it says in the next Pasuk, which is 40, but since it says Bimisper in a number, and then the next Pasuk becomes Arboim, then it means the next number that's going to lead to 40. There are a few different interesting explanations among the Rishonim how exactly we get this point. That it is in fact 39 and not 40. The Rambam actually says a different explanation of it, which is that midaraisa should have been 40, but the Chachamim take off one because as a gedder, basically as a siyog latoda, to prevent them from giving him the 40th one. Because after all, we're going to learn that if he gives him one extra one and he dies and he goes to the Orei Miklot, so this way, even if he loses count and gives one extra, then still he's not being over on hitting him too much. That would be another reason why we do 39. And then there's various other explanations that Mephoshim say of where we get that point from. Rabbi Yonis and Ibershitz and Yaris Dvash actually has a fascinating explanation. He says the 40 Malkus correspond to the 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu was receiving the Torah on Har Sinai. But we know we have the opinion that of Rabbi Yossi, that Hosef Moshe Yom Echad Midaita, that Moshe added one day before Matan Torah of his own, and the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan. So then it would come out that Moshe was on Har Sinai for only 39 days. So therefore, the Torah wrote 40 because that's the expectation would have been that Moshe is going to be there for 40 days. But then Hashem leaves open for a Dirasha, knowing that in the end it's going to be only 39 days. Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Boim Shlemus, who loiter, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, no, he gets full 40. Now, the Mishnah is later on going to describe that they give him the 39, or however, when it's done in thirds, we're going to say that the Mishnah at the bottom of the next Amud is going to talk about one third of them are given two thirds of them are given on his back and one third on his front. So it has to be, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, ones that are divisible in three. Well, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you have 40, 40 doesn't divide evenly by three. So Vahechen Oloike Esayisera, where does he get, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the extra one, Ben Ksefa, is between his shoulder blades, as we'll see in the Gemara. He learns that from a pasuk. The Mishnah continues. Now, before they give the person Malkus, they have to have doctors evaluate him how much he's going to be able to take, because the point of the Malkus is to hit him, but not to kill him. So we need to make sure as much as possible that he's going to survive the whole thing. So ein umden oise elav Malkus reuislishtalish. We evaluate him only with ones that are divisible by three, as we'll see in the Gemara. Amduhu l'kabel arboim. What if they evaluated that he's able to take all 40, or 39, according to the Tanakhama? V'loiter v'loka miktas. Now what happens is, suppose he got some of them, v'omru she'en yochel l'kabel arboim. Now at this point, the doctors are watching, or the Beis Din is watching, and saying, you know what, he's not going to be able to take any more. If we give him any more at this point, then he's going to die. He's weaker than we thought. So then he's potter from getting any more malchus. So let's say, in other words, they said he could get 39. Now let's say we went through 12, 18, whatever it is, and now at that point, then he can't take any more, then that's it, he's potter. There are Rishonim who have the Girsa that actually the word is Chayev. It would mean we only give him whatever he can take right now, and then later on after he recovers, then we give him the rest. But most Rishonim learn that they have the Girsa over here, Potter, and it means, in other words, that he's Potter in the future, and that's how the Rambam passes it. Another case, Amdul Lakabal Shmoina Esrei, suppose they evaluated him, they could take 18, Umishalaka, and then as he's getting the Malkus, they see that he's stronger than they expected. The Omru, when they evaluated Shiyochol Lakabal Aboyim, that he will in fact be able to get all 40, or 39, Potter, then he's still Potter from getting anything more than what they evaluated him to begin with. The Rivan says specifically that that's only talking about where they already started giving him the Malkus on the original evaluation. So they evaluated 18. They started giving the 18, and then in the middle they realized he'd be able to take a lot more. But if they hadn't given him yet the Malkus, then the Rivan says they would be able to instead make a second evaluation and give a new larger number. So the Gemara starts off, my timer, why are we saying that he gets a point in the Tanakhama 39 when the Pasuk says 40? So the answer is Iksiv Aboyim B'Mispar, because if the Torah had said 40 in account, Havamin Aboyim B'Minyana, then it would mean exactly that, 40 in account, meaning a full 40. Hashlich to B'Mispar Aboyim, but since now the Torah says in the number 40 means minion, as we said in the Mishnah, minion shuv soichem es arboim, the Mishnah that is the number that is going to complete, that's going to lead to the complete count of 40, namely he says 39, and then 39, and then the next number after that would have been 40. Again, according to many Rishonim, we're talking about this is actually Daraisa. According to the Rambam, it's Midrabanan, which Midrabanan itself could mean the Chachamim made a siyog laTorah, as they're entitled to do. It could also mean the Chachamim Darshan the Psukim. Sometimes the Rambam called that Divrei Sofrim as well, in which case it would still be Doraisa. And then you have that Remez in the 39 or 40 days on Har Sinai. The various Mephoshim also talk about one point of 40 Malkus is it represents the number of days that it takes a baby to be formed in the womb. So now he was over on that, and therefore he gets Malkus, and now he was over on the fact that he was created in order to do what Hashem wants in the world, and now he's violating that, so therefore he gets Malkus. But again, we're saying that the Torah is reducing it by one to have Rachmanis on him. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Kamatip Shoi, Hani Shar Inchi, how foolish are certain kinds of common people, Dekaimi Mikame Sefer Torah, but Dekaimi Mikame Gavar Rabba. They stand up in honor of a Sefer Torah when they see it passing, but they don't stand up in honor of a Talmud Chacham when he passes by. They should realize the greatness of the Talmud Chacham is greater even than the Torah. The Ilba Sefer Torah, Ksiv Aboyim. Here you have an example. The Sefer Torah itself says that a person has to get 40 Malkus. For Osir Rabbanan, Bos Ruchoda. And here the Chachamim, with their Drosha or their Siog or whatever, come and take away one and say that it's really only 39. So you should realize, in other words, that the power of the Chachamim, in a way, is greater than that of the Torah. So therefore these tipshim should realize that, and they ought to be standing up in front of a Talmud Chacham. Now, there is a relevant Gemara on this in Kiddushin that actually says the other way around over there. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that how do we know? You have to stand up when you see a Sefer Torah passing by, and the answer is because if you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, how much more so for the Torah itself? So here, in other words, so here we're saying that the Talmud Chacham outranks the Torah. There we seem to be saying that the Torah outranks the Talmud Chacham. So which one is it? So Mephoshim deal with a lot of possibilities in it. The Marsha says over here that the vote is like this. You have a certain type of person, we learned about them in Sanhedrin, where they say, Maya Hanulon Rabbanon, what good do the Chachamim do us? Anything that requires us to understand the Torah, we can understand ourselves, as the Gemara had to have the expression over there. They've never said that a raven is kosher. They've never said that a dove is unkosher, meaning we can learn for ourselves from the Psukim what's osur and what's mutter. And the Gemara tells over there how Rava would demonstrate to such people how they're wrong. So here now, in other words, these are the type of people who think, therefore, that why should we honor the Chachamim? So now you want them to realize, you know what, the Chachamim are doing a lot of benefit. Here you have a person who's supposed to be getting 40 Malkus, and conceivably the 40th lash might kill him, and instead the Chachamim are explaining to us that the Pasuk is saying only 39, so you see that the Chachamim are in fact accomplishing a tremendous amount of good for us. So then the Gemara in Kedushin is talking about for regular people who don't put down the Chachamim like that. So for them, we can make a Kal v'Chomer and say that the Sefer Torah is greater than the Chachamim. There's a number of different other explanations. Marsha refers over here to an explanation of the Ran on the relevant Gemara and Kiddushin, where the Ran gives the explanation like this. Listen, you know, if it weren't for the Chachamim, we wouldn't be able to understand the Torah properly. The Torah would be like wrapped up and put in a corner, and nobody would be able to learn it. So therefore, so on the one hand, yes, the Sefer Torah is more important, as the Gemara says there in Kiddushin, because the fact is that the Talmid Chachamim are learning it, and that their greatness as Chachamim comes from the Torah. On the other hand, the fact is, without the Chachamim, we wouldn't understand the Torah, and therefore the Gemara can well be saying that the foolish people are not realizing that they should stand up and honor the Talmud Chacham, because without them the Torah would be a closed book to us. And then there's different other explanations. The Aruch HaNer mentions over here that the Gemara in Kiddushin is referring to somebody who only learned Torah Shebichsav. But nevertheless, the Kal Vachomer would tell us that the Torah Shebichsav that he learned is more important than he is. Whereas here we're talking about an Odom Gadol, a Gavra Rabba, as the Gemara had phrased it, where he also knows Torah Shebalpeh, so he's greater than a Sefer Torah, because we're saying that he can darshan the Pasuk in a way that seems to override the simple meaning of it. The Gemara continues. So that's the Tanakhama. So the Tanakhama is saying that you get 39 by darshaning the Pasuk, or as the Rambam says, maybe by a Siyog LaTorah. Okay? Then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, Imar Boim Shlemes V'chola, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda had said he gets 40 complete Malkus, and he said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that last one would be given Bein Ksefa between his shoulder blades. So, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that? Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in the Navi Zechariah. The context is that the context of the pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote is talking about false Nevi'im, where there's going to come a time when everybody is going to say. That people are going to know there's no such thing as Nevi'im anymore, and now when a person comes and claims to be a Navi, then they're going to be, and then people are going to realize that he's a false Navi, and they're not going to listen to him, and they're going to be angry at him and beat him up and whatever. And then the Pasuk says, but Omar, there's people ask, Moham Maka Sa'ela Ben Yodecha, what are these blows between your hands, meaning between your shoulder blades? But Omar was going to say, Ashohu Kasi, Beis Ma'avai, that I was struck in the house of those who love me. Meaning, in other words, that he's admitting that I was a false Navi and I was given Malkus for it. So therefore, since it says, Bein Yodecha, between your hands, so in other words, we see that a person is being given Malkus, there's a blow that goes between his hands, between his shoulder blades, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, from there you see that there's one that goes over there. What are the Chachamim answer to that? They say, no, that pasuk is talking about Tinoikas Shobes Rabban, whereas we learned earlier in the Masechta, there are times when the Rebbe has to hit them in order to get them to do what they're supposed to in class, so a person is going to be saying that I was hit in Cheder like that, to make me learn properly, and it has nothing to do with Malkus and Bastin, per se. Maushrav gives a long explanation over here that the idea is, in other words, the whole point of Malkus is to get him back on the proper path, not to kill him. And the same thing with Tinokas Shabbos Rabban. The purpose is just in order to get them on the proper path, which is why the Pasuk uses the expression, Beis Ma'avai, it's in the place of those who love me, and therefore they do it, Bein Ksefa, between his shoulders, meaning in a place which is not, they're not doing it on vital parts of his body, where it might conceivably kill him, because the whole point is that they love him and they want to get him back on the right path of Torah and Mitzvahs. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Ein umdin elab makas ra'uyas v'chola." The Mishnah had described and said that you give that when they evaluate how much he can take is always ones that are divisible in three. And then the Mishnah had gone on to say, you have the cases where they started giving him the Malkus, and they realized he's not going to be able to go through everything they evaluated, so we said he's potter, and then vice versa. We said if they evaluated he can take less, and then it turns out that he can take more, then he's still also potter. So the Gemara says, loka ein loy loka loy. Now, when you're talking about in the first case of the Mishnah, you're saying that if he started getting the Malkus and then they realize he can't, then we're saying he's potter from everything else, loy loka, but implying if he had not yet gotten the Malkus. So let's say, so in other words, they evaluated and they said he can take 39. Then before they actually started giving the Malkus, they said, wait a minute, you know what, he's not going to be able to take 39. He's only going to be able to take 21 or whatever. So it sounds like the Mishnah is saying, loy, then no, then we would actually do, then we would reevaluate. And he's not Potter, and he's not Potter from whatever he can get. The question is, we're a Minhu, though I have a contradiction, because the Braisa says, Amduhu l'kabala boyim, if they evaluated that he is able to get 40, v'chozir v'omu she'en yochol l'kabala boyim, then they re-evaluated and said he actually is not going to be able to get 40. So then he's Potter from getting Malkus at all. And the Braita continues, Amduhu l'kabal shmoina esrei. What if they evaluated, for example, that he's going to be able to get 18 Malkus, which is fine because that's a number divisible by 3. And then they reevaluated and said that he could get 40. Potter, that he's Potter from getting the whole 40. He just gets 18. So we see that even before, the Braisa is talking about he hadn't yet even gotten Malkus and was still saying that we can reevaluate. So the Rivon points out, both parts of the Braisa seem to contradict the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah had said, the first case of the Mishnah had been that only when he started getting the Malkus, and then they realized, wait, he's not going to be able to take everything, then we talked to him at that point, but not if he hadn't yet gotten the Malkus, so that contradicts the first case of the Braisa. And the second case in the Braisa, where they said he can get 18, and then as he's getting the Malkus, they said, wait, he can get 40, then we give him only the 18. Whereas the Braisa is talking about before they started giving the Malkus, and then they can reevaluate, and even then they can't reevaluate him over 18. So how do we reconcile it? Rav Sheshes like Kasha. So Rav Sheshes says there's no contradiction. The difference would be it says on the side, for its day. Meaning, in other words, there can be where they made an evaluation that today is how much he'll be able to get, whether 18 or 40 is the case, maybe. So let's say the first case of the Mishnah, they evaluated that he can take full 39, then on the day that they're going to be giving him the Malkus, now, On that same day, even before they start the Malkus, then they realize he's not going to be able to take that, and 39 Malkus will kill him. Well, then that shows, it's all on the same day, so it shows that obviously their first evaluation was no good, and therefore, because after all, it's all the same day. Nothing has changed in him in that short amount of time. So therefore, it must be the first evaluation was a mistake. So now, if they originally said 39, and then they said, wait, he can only get 18. So now, if he already started getting the Malkus, then he already went through the Bizoyan, and therefore he can be Potter. But if he didn't get the Malkus, then it would be, we would ignore that first evaluation altogether. So we would wait until now it would be basically that he says right now he can't get Malkus at all. So now in that case, he's not going to be completely Potter. We're going to have to wait until he recovers from the Malkus. Until he's stronger, and then we're going to give him, a proper evaluation. So that would explain the first case of the Mishnah versus the Braisa. So again, we could say, in other words, it's all on one day. So then we ignore the first evaluation completely because there's no way that he weakens so much within one day. So that's in the Mishnah. So now if he had already gotten some of the Malkus, then we patter him at that point. But if he hadn't gotten the Malkus yet, then we ignore the first evaluation. That would explain the ratio of the Mishnah. As far as the Sefer, the other way around, where we said that he could get 18, and then they say, wait, he can actually get 40, similar kind of thing. If it comes out, they said he can get 18, and on that same day, they said that, you know what, he could actually get 39, it means that their first evaluation was a mistake, and therefore, so if he got all the 18, then we talked to him. At that point, once he left Bastin, it would be Bizoyan to return into Bastin, the Rivon explains. But if not, then they can add to the original evaluation, because obviously the 18 was completely a mistake. That's all the Mishnah. Now, the Braisa, on the other hand, which implies that even if he hadn't yet gotten the Malkus, then they can then he would be Potter, that was talking about the Amdul Mokhra, the Yom Okhra, where they evaluated him for tomorrow or for another day, meaning, in other words, so now they said on Monday, that tomorrow, on Tuesday, he will be able to get X number of Malkus. So now, very well, on Monday he was strong enough to be able to get X amount, and on Tuesday he's weaker, or the other way around. Monday he was weaker, and Tuesday he's stronger. So now they made an evaluation. Now when it comes that day, it turns out he can't get as many. Fine, it was a valid evaluation. But now, he can't get that, so therefore, so now at least he had just the fact that they evaluated him itself, that itself is a bizoyan. And therefore, we're going to see in the following Mishnayos that once he goes through a certain amount of bizoyan, that he's potter from Malkus, so in that case, then now in this case, he went through that bizoyan, and now therefore he's potter. So that would explain the first case of the Braisa, where they said that he could get 40, and then it turns out the next day they say, you know what, actually he's not able to, then that would be a reason to pater him. Vice versa, if they said that on such and such a day he's going to be able to get 18, and now comes that day, and they say, you know what, he can get 39, then he's going to be able to get only, then he gets only the 18, because that means it was a true valid evaluation. It just means that since then he's gotten stronger. That's all the Rivon's explanation. He says, Kach Niro the Rebbe, this is how my Rebbe explained it. Papashus, the Rivon's Rebbe is Rashi, although it may have been someone else. Then he gives a whole different explanation. Then he gives a whole different explanation, that just the opposite, that yeah, the Mishnah is still talking about on that day, he only gets he's the only potter if he actually gets the Malkus, because certainly he's going to be able to get some of the Malkus, but if they said that he's going to be able to get them in a day or two later, then obviously has no koyach to get it right now, so now therefore, if they change their mind, he's going to be potter. But he says, V'loy Nehira, that second explanation is not really so clear, and not really valid, and it's better to keep with the first explanation. Tosfos further discusses the point, and discusses what exactly are the scenarios, if it was all on the same day and he hadn't yet gotten the Malkus, then the opposite of the Rivon's first explanation, we would say that actually we would consider that the first evaluation was a true one. We're going to have to wait until he's healthier, and then he's going to get that, and then he's going to get that number of Malkus. But meanwhile, if they also said on that day, you know what, we'll see what he can get tomorrow, then after all, there can be his health changed between one and the other, and then we're going to have to go according to the second evaluation. And vice versa if he became stronger during that time. So that's another way of explaining the Mishnah versus the Braisa. And then again, there are various other points that different Rishonim make, of exactly the distinction between today versus tomorrow in terms of when we say that we ignore the first evaluation altogether and then just do a second one versus when we stick with the original one and that's that. Okay. The Mishnah says, continues the Mishnah, over Avera Shiyesh for Shnei Lavin. Now what happens if he was over something where he's chayev for multiple Lavin? So you could have two, you could have in an earlier Mishnah we had eight. So now each one needs its own evaluation. So it depends. If they gave him all one big evaluation, Loika U Potter, then he gets that and he's Potter. Meaning, let's say for example he was chayev double Malkus. So now he's supposed to be getting 78. So now the doctors might say that, you know what, he's going to be able to take altogether, let's say 45. So then they give him 45, and that's it. He's Potter. 45 is a lot less than 78, but it doesn't matter. Even if it comes out that he's able to actually get more in the end. The Imlav, if they only evaluated him that he can only get for one lav, loika, that he gets the Malkus for that, and then we wait until he's healed, v'chois of a loika, and then he gets Malkus for the second one. So the Gemara says, what do you mean to begin with that we can make one evaluation to cover both of them? V'altanya, we learn in a braisa, ein oimdin, oimid echad, l'shnei lavin, we do not do one evaluation to cover two lavin. Each one has to be evaluated separately for how much malchus he's going to be able to get. And in fact, the Orach HaNer points out, now the Gemara, on the face of it, the answer could very well be that they're talking about whether he's chayev for one action or for different things. Let's say, for example, you could have, you know, we have the cases before where he does one action and he's chayev multiple malchus, so maybe you could say it was only one action, maybe you do one big evaluation, versus you could say where he did different averus and is being brought to Beis Din all at one time. The Gemara does not make that distinction, and the Rambam also does not bring that distinction, so the Orach HaNer points out that shows there is, in fact, no such distinction, and it doesn't really matter whether it was two lavim within one action or whether it was actually two different actions. In which case, the reason why the Mishnah with the Ritzvah explains, in that case, the reason why the Mishnah says Aveda Shiyash for Shnei Lavin is because you could say that would be the typical case where they would make one evaluation to cover both of them. If it was actually two different Avedas, we wouldn't expect them to even do that in the first place. In any case, the Braisa makes it clear that if it's two different, that if it's two Lavin, then they can't do that. Amar of Sheshes, like Kasha, Rav Sheshes says there's no contradiction. Hodam Dula Boim B'Choda, Hodam Dula Boim B'Tarti. Say, for example, you could have where they evaluated him that the total amount he could get is 41. Now, we said that you have to have numbers that are divisible by 3. 41 doesn't divide by 3. And we always have to round down, as we're going to see further on. You can't say, for example, that if they said he can get 41, then we round it up to 42 and say, well, that's divisible by 3. No, it doesn't work that way. You always, if you have to round, it's going to be rounding downward. So 41 means we're going to have to round it down to 39. Well, in that case, 39 only covers one lav. So now we would say that would be the case where the Mishnah is saying that in that case you say, fine, well, 39 he can get, so that'll cover one lav, and then afterwards, after he recovers, then we'll do the second one. On the other hand, Hodam Dula Boim Batarti, suppose that they evaluated that he can take 42 or 45 or whatever it is, those are numbers divisible by 3, so therefore, fine, we can say 39 of them are going to go for the first lav, and 3 or 6 so however many are left, are going to go for the second lav, and then he'll be potter, and we'll just give him the whole 42 all at once, and then he'll be potter from both of them. Okay. And Nisha says, Hates and Malkin Osei. What's the actual procedure how they give the Malkus? So they have like this. There's a pillar in Beis Din, a low pillar. So they tie him, they tie his two arms to either side of the pillar. Rashi, the Rivan, describes that the pillar is like an amma and a half or two ammas tall, and it's a little bit, now the person is bent over, with his hands hanging downward, and then they tie his arms to the two sides of the pillar. As we'll see in the Gemara, that he has to be in a leaning position when we do Malkus on Erev Yom Kippur. Symbolically, then we also have the person kind of kneels or crouches on the ground, but he was saying with real Malkus, he would be standing, but then kind of bent over at the waist and with his hands tied to this pole. The Chazan HaKnesses, which is the Shamash of the Kohol, the Rivan says, why is such a person called a Chazan? He says, I don't know why. Lo Shamaiti, but Shumashmos, the Rivan says, I haven't heard any reason why this functionary is called a Chazan. The Marshal says a reason might be actually because he's Choyzeh, he's looking into what needs to be done. And he looks into what needs to be done for the tzibur, and therefore he's called chazan. Anyway, so the chazan, nowadays we use the chazan to mean something else, but in a case in Gemara terminology, the chazan usually means something like the shamash. Anyway, so the chazan akneses oichas bivgodav grabs a hold of his garment. And then to rip it, because yeah, we have to take off his clothing as the Mishnah as we're going to learn, in order for him to have to give the Malkus on his bare skin, so they have to remove his clothing. So, and they do it in this way, why don't we just tell him to take off his shirt, is because we have to do it in a way of bizoyan. The Pasuk says, by Malkus, the nikla achicha la'inecha, your brother will be degraded in your presence, so therefore there are certain things that we have to do in order for him to be degraded. So he grabs a hold of his clothes by the neckline and starts whipping. And that's actually the Ritzvah learns that he holds at the neckline. The Meiri says he starts whipping from underneath. Whatever the case, im nikru nikru, he starts pulling off the clothing. Im nikru, if it tears, nikru, then it tears, fine, it doesn't matter. Im nifrumu, and if it gets tattered, nifrumu, then it gets whipped. There are several different, you have the same expression in connection with a soita. So actually, we just had that in Ein Yaakov a couple of days ago. And of course, for those who are learning soita during Svira, then they came across it recently also. There was a nikru versus versus Nifumu, there's several different explanations among Mephoshim, what it means. The Rivana, he explains that Nikru would be that so he says that Nifrumu means that the seams come undone. So Nikru would be the fabric itself tears, and Nifrumu would mean that it tears on a seam. There's other, different other explanations that it means that, that it means the other way around, that one possibility is the other way around, that Nikru means on a seam and Nifrumu means not on a seam. Rashi in Sota over there explains that, that Nifrumu is more of a rift than the Nikru. It's ripped into many different little fragments. The Rambam gives an explanation over there that Nikru is vertical and Nifrumu is horizontal. Whatever the case, you have several different possibilities of what it means. But in other words, the point is the clothing is ripped. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because that's part of the process. Adshu Magala Esliboy, until he uncovers the person's heart, because you have to have his chest that's to be uncovered, because some of them, the Malkus, are going to reach over there. As the Pasuk in fact says, Mephoshim explained, because the Pasuk says, Vihikohu, he should strike him, which implies Dafka him and not his clothing. The Mishnah continues. Va'evin nesuna me'achrav. Now, behind the person who's now tied to this pole, there's a stone over there. Chazan HaKnesses oimed olav, and the Chazan HaKnesses, the Shamash, stands on that to give the Malkus. The Pashtus, because when he's higher up, then the Malkus will be with more force. Uritsua biyodei, he's holding in his hand a strap, a whip, shall eagle, made out of calf skin, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, why that's the calf skin. It's folded, it starts out with one strap, which is folded into two, and then folded into four. The Rivon explains that it means that we have actually it's two different straps that are sewn or whatever or attached together, each one folded over, meaning that altogether you have a fourfold strap, but it's made of two different pieces. And the Marshal has a different understanding of the Rivon, that no, it means it's one long piece of leather which is folded in four. So you have that. And then in addition, you also have two strips of leather from donkey skin that are going up and down in it. Why donkey skin, we'll see in the Gemara. What it means, Olas Viodas, the Rivon explains that it means that as he picks up, they're attached to the middle of the strap. As the strap is lifted up and down, then those go up and down with it. The Rivon brings that explanation from his Rebbe, but he says, V'loi Nehira, it's not clear that explanation. So he says, rather, Olas Viodas means, in other words, like you have, they go in and out. They're woven in it. The donkey skin is woven in and out through holes that go in the calf skin. You have holes over there where you have strips of donkey leather that go in and out of those holes and are like braided together with it. That way it makes the blows stronger. You have other explanations of what it means exactly. An interesting point, by the way, why it's folded into four is because you have the Gemara elsewhere mentions in Sota that you have Lumad of the Lama of Lishma of the Lassos. So here he was over on the Torah says in all those four areas, and therefore he's Chayav Malkus with a fourfold strap. And then we'll see in the Gemara why that's the calf skin and donkey skin. Next, Yoda Tefach, the handle of the strap that the Chazan HaKnesses is holding is a Tefach wide. The Rosha al pi kresoi, the Magas al pi kresoi, Yoda Tefach, the Rochba Tefach, the width of the strap that they do the Malkus with is also a Tefach. The Rosha Magas al pi kresoi, the tip of it is long enough to reach around his body and reach his front, to reach his stomach. So in other words, you want that at any given point when he's hitting him on the back, you want the blow to be only on the back, and you want when he's hitting him on the front, it should go only on the front. So you have to have it has to be made. In other words, the Rivon explains that he's standing sort of to the side of the person. He's standing, we said behind him, but it's kind of to the side of him, and he's whipping him across the back. So it has to be that it reaches all the way to where his stomach begins. So so that way each blow will go where it's supposed to. The blows are 1/3 in front on his stomach and 2/3 on his back, as we'll see in the Gemara. When the person is getting the malchus, he can't be standing or he can't be sitting. Elamuti, he has to be bent over, like we said before, bent over and tied to the pole over there. As the pasuk says, the shofet, the dayan, should make him fall down. So therefore, we see that he has to be in a falling, leaning position. Next, the Mishnah continues. The one who's striking him, the Chazan HaKnesses, hits him each time with one hand with all of his force. Meaning, because if he were to use two hands, it's not always possible when you're doing something with two hands to coordinate them and then make sure that you're giving the full blow, so therefore he does it dapper with one hand. Meanwhile, you have somebody reading psukim over there, as the Rivon explains, based on a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. There needs to, the pasuk says, Bikuras Ti, and we learn Bikriya Tehei, so Malchus has to be accompanied by reading a psukim. So the one who's reading the psukim reads as follows. He quotes the pasuk from the Torah, Im Lois Sishmer Lasis Vagomer, if you don't guard to do the Torah that Hashem said, so then the pasuk continues, Behifla Hashem is Makoscha, Hashem will increase and Hashem will make wondrous your blows, vas makos and the blows on your children, etc. So he reads that pasuk, v'chozov atchilas hamikra. And if he hasn't finished the pasuk by the time they finish the malchus, then he repeats back and starts over from the beginning of the pasuk until he gets through all the malchus. And he says the words ushmartem as divrei abris hazos for gemer. Then he says the pasuk, you should guard the words of this bris and do them, and v'choisim. And he finishes off v'horachem v'chaparov and gemer. And he quotes that pasuk v'choisim v'tchilas hamikra. And again, he repeats the pasukim as many times as are necessary for the malchus. The Marashah gives an interesting explanation over here that actually, first of all, it doesn't mean that the girsa, the Rambam and the Smag don't have a girsa, that he repeats it, but rather that they make sure to time it, that these psukim finish at the same time as the Malchus. And also, they don't mention the pasuk of Shmartin. So he explains, in other words, the pasuk of Hifla Hashem as Makoscha has the pasuk in Lois Sishmer Lasses for Gomer has 21 words. So you have, therefore, now you have 26 makos that go on his back. So therefore, so to fill that up, you say the words of Shmartin es Divrei Abris Hazois, and that's the 5 words that makes up 26. Then you have 13 from Vehurachum, makes up a total of 39. So that's how you do it. So you have a total of 39 words when we do Malchus symbolically on Erev Yom Kippur, we do the Pasuk V'horachum 3 times. Similar idea. The Mes Tachas Yodei, now the Mishnah continues, if the person getting Malchus dies during the Malchus, Potter, then the Chazan HaKnesses is Potter, because after all, they did the Oymed, they did the evaluation, as we said before, and what could you do? He was just doing what he's supposed to do. And in a shliach based in, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that if a shliach based in kills somebody accidentally while he's giving him malchus, then he's potter because he's doing what he's supposed to do. On the other hand, if he added even one more blow to what he was supposed to, and then the guy dies, how it is a goylal yodin, and the Chazan HaKnesses is going to have to go to the Ori Miklot, because that already he didn't have the right to do, and it's considered that he killed him b'shoigig. The Rivon mentions a point, by the way, that you have a case where a bunch of people hit someone and then he died. And we said all of them are potter, but they're goyses b'day adam, and therefore they're all potter from Nisla. But here we're talking about that he gave him one extra blow and then killed him, and therefore now he's chayev, and then now he's malchus for that, and then now he's chayev goyes for that rather. Actually, the Ritva explains that the golus would be only if he added the extra one because of the Dayan's mistake. If he himself gave the extra one on his own, he's part of lamezid, because you should realize that at this point the person is in great danger of dying. The Mishnah finishes off the Skalko Ben Beri Ben Mamayim. If while the guy is getting Malkus, he gets filthied with excrement or with Mayim or with urine, so because of the fear or the pain or whatever, he ends up losing control of his bowels, Potter, then he's Potter from any further Malkus, because as the Gemara is going to say, he already went through the Venikla at that point, he already went through the public humiliation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, not always. For a man, it would have to be that it was excrement, that he actually lost control and his bowels were loose, and therefore he's potter at that point from any further malchus. But not if he just urinated, because for a man, it's not as much of an embarrassment. With a woman, it would be even if she only urinated, that would be enough reason to potter her from any further malchus. Now, Allah was like a hachamim, so it has to be, so it doesn't matter whether man or woman, it's ri or b'mayim, and then the Gemara, we'll learn tomorrow, we'll discuss all of these points, Beis Hashem.